Have you ever wondered why exactly it is that things usually sound better at home than they do on stage, in auditions, or even in lessons? It's easy to chalk it up to nerves or assume that you just have to practice more or get more performance experience. And sure, those things certainly are part of the puzzle, but a lot of times that's not really the true root cause. If you've been confused by the inconsistency of your performances, I put together a free 4-minute quiz called the Mental Skills Audit, which will help you pinpoint your mental strengths and weaknesses and figure out what exactly to adjust and tweak in your preparation for more consistently optimal performances. You can take the Mental Skills Audit online at bulletproofmusician.com/MSA. That's MSA for Mental Skills Audit. And again, it's 100% free, and it'll take just 4 minutes to get your results emailed to you as a PDF. This is Noah Kageyama, and you're listening to the Bulletproof Musician Podcast. Every Sunday morning, we'll take a look at a new research-based tip or technique to help you practice more effectively or perform better under pressure. And on the first Sunday of every month, I'll have a guest from the music, sport, or research world who will share their insights on how we can all be a little more awesome in the practice room and on stage. Have you ever found yourself worrying about a tricky passage in the middle of a performance and then totally flubbing it when you get there, precisely because you were overthinking it? For better or for worse, the things we think about when playing can have a significant impact on how we play. And thinking too much about a difficult passage is one of those things that's probably going to do more harm than good. But it's not like we can just zone out when we play either. We have to think about something. So if thinking about an awkward shift coming up in two lines is not helpful, what exactly is the most performance-enhancing thing to think about when we're trying to play as cleanly and accurately as possible? Well, there's an interesting study of golfers that gives us some intriguing clues. 33 skilled golfers with an average handicap of 5.5 were asked to make a short 20-meter chip shot from the fairway to the green, with the goal being to get the ball as close to the hole as possible. Each shot was scored based on the distance from the final position of the ball to the hole. For instance, if they got a hole in one, their score would be 0. If the ball came to a stop 2 meters in front of the hole or 2 meters behind the hole, their score would be a 2. And the worst score they could get on any hole was a 5. So even if they hit the ball 10 meters past the hole, their score for that shot would still be a 5. So then the golfers were randomly assigned to one of three groups. Each group would go through the exact same procedure, hitting the same shot from the same place with the same club. However, the different groups would be asked to focus on a different aspect of the shot. The internal focus group was instructed to focus on the motion of the arms during the swing and to, quote, maintain the hinge in the wrists through impact. They were also told to repeat the phrase wrist hinge either out loud or to themselves before each shot, and asked, quote, to what extent did you maintain the hinge in your wrists during that swing after each shot? The idea here was to get them to focus on their body and one very specific aspect of the mechanics of the shot. Another group, the proximal external focus group, was instructed to focus on, quote, the position of the club face through the swing, and in particular, keeping the club face square through impact. The cue phrase they were asked to repeat before each shot was square face. And after each shot, they were asked, quote, to what extent did you maintain a square club face during that swing? Rather than having these golfers focus on their body, the idea was to shift their focus to something outside of, but still pretty close to their body, like the hitting surface of the golf club. The last group, the distal external focus group, was instructed to focus on, quote, the flight of the ball after it had left the club face, and in particular, the direction in which they intended to set the ball. Their cue phrase was straight flight, and they were asked, quote, to what extent did you set the ball out on a desirable direction for that shot after each attempt? This group was encouraged to put their focus much further away from their body and to direct their attention away from the mechanics of their shot and onto the desired end result of all their movements, the trajectory and direction of the ball in the air. So was there any difference between the groups? Well, the golfers were tested in two different ways. They started with 30 shots in low-key, practice-like conditions. But then, for the next 20 shots, the researchers added some pressure. These shots were videotaped, and participants were told that a PGA pro would watch and provide an evaluation of their chipping performance. Plus, their scores would be published in a league table, And there were prizes ranging from 80 pounds to 10 pounds for the five golfers whose average scores improved the most from the initial set of low-pressure shots to the last set of high-pressure shots. In regular practice-like conditions, the golfers who adopted a distal external focus and focused on the flight of the ball performed the best, with an average score of about 1.5. They consistently hit the ball significantly closer to the hole than either of the other two groups. In turn, the proximal external group, which focused on something outside of but still close to their body, i.e. the position of the club face, they didn't do quite as well as the distal external group, with a score on average of about 2.1, but they did perform significantly better than the internal focus group, which focused on the motion of their arms, and averaged a score just about 3. And what happened under pressure? Well, the distal external focus seemed to work better under pressure too. Once again, participants in the distal external group hit the ball significantly more accurately than the proximal external and internal focus groups. So what does this mean for musicians? How would you translate flight of the ball into musician-friendly terms? Well, the musician's analog might be the pitch of a note, the color and sound quality of a note, the shaping of a phrase, the voicing, or the kind of attack or articulation you want. The idea is to focus on something that's closer to the end goal that you're aiming for and further away from your hands, your embouchure, and the specific mechanics of how to hit that high note or navigate the tricky passage ahead. That said, an external focus of attention may not be universally helpful all the time. If you're still working on figuring out the mechanics of vibrato or smooth bow changes or how to produce a particular type of sound, it may be that an internal focus could be more useful until the skill starts to become more well ingrained in muscle memory. So try this out with something you know pretty well and something that's still pretty new. Experiment with the different types of external and internal focus, and you might be surprised by how much of a difference it makes in the consistency, fluidity, and accuracy of your playing. You can find links to this week's study and other resources at bulletproofmusician.com/blog. And if you found the episode helpful, please share it with a friend or practice buddy who you think might also enjoy experimenting with this during the coming week.